From the studios of KPCW in Park City, this is The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
And I'm Mary Beth Maziarz.
This morning, we speak first with Dr. Carrie Jaworski. She is a sports medicine physician at Intermountain Park City Hospital's Sports Performance Center. She'll talk to us about a speaker series for young female athletes and their parents. It begins next Tuesday, April 30th at 6 p.m. at the Blair Education Center at the hospital. Again, the focus is on helping young female athletes thrive.
Then local resident Amy McDonald, founder and director of Brawley Arts, will join the show to discuss how a movement called Illusion of Abundance, IOA, a grassroots racial, social, and climate justice project. It exposes a climate and culture in crisis due to the declining Great Salt Lake.
Stay with us. We'll be back after these words. You're listening to The Mountain Life here on KPCW Park City. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Mountain Life. I'm Lynn Ware Peak. Intermountain Park City Hospital is hosting a three-part free speaker series to provide aspiring female athletes ages 12 to 18 and their parents with the latest information and tools to help them thrive in all types of sports and athletics. Joining me now to tell us more is Dr. Carrie Jaworski. She's a sports medicine doctor at Intermountain Park City Hospital's Sports Performance Center. In 2022, Dr. Jaworski joined the team that includes Dr. Max Testa. She's a huge proponent of the concept of exercise is medicine. She serves on the Exercise is Medicine Governance Board and is a former vice president of the American College of Sports Medicine. Dr. Jaworski, welcome to The Mountain Life.
Thank you so much, Lynn. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, time has really flown for the last almost 2 years that you have been practicing in Park City, and there have been a lot of changes, including an addition to the wing of the hospital where you all have your operation. Can you just, before we get into the thick of the speaker series, can you give listeners an idea of what has changed in the last couple of years?
Absolutely. So we are still in the process of changing, I should say. So when people come over, they'll still see some construction going on. But ultimately, what we're trying to achieve is really a center for, I'm just going to call it human performance. We don't have an official name, but really kind of an integrative approach to care of people of all ages, encouraging healthy lifestyles. So that includes my passion, which is, as you mentioned, exercise, but all the other components. So mental health and nutrition and taking an integrative approach with our massage therapists and acupuncturists and everyone that works within our center, really kind of taking that lifestyle approach to keeping people healthy, which I have to say in Park City is a little bit easier to do because there's so many nice ways to stay healthy. So
right.
We'll have a grand opening probably sometime later this year where people can come through and see. We'll have a new sports performance center as well that's expanded to allow for some more testing and whatnot.
Okay, great. Yeah, so it's sort of taking what was previously the Live Well Center and the physical therapy department and the sports performance department and have combined you all into one, under one roof, shall we say.
Correct. They've knocked down the walls. So when you walk in the center, you look to the left and right and you see rehab services, including things like cardiac rehab and neurologic rehab on one side, and then the sports performance on the other side with the physicians housed in the middle, but free passage between all of it so we can all collaborate, which is wonderful.
Yeah, that is wonderful. Well, it's interesting that you're introducing this speaker series for young female athletes, aspiring female athletes. It really makes me think that perhaps since you and I were young women pursuing athletics, that there's a lot more that we've learned about what happens. And it could have a lot to do with sort of early specialization, I suppose. But what is the crux? Why did you decide this speaker series was important?
Well, I think to even back it up a step, what I was seeing along with my two colleagues, Marlene Hatch and Robin Hayes, who I'm sure many people know, all of us were talking about our own personal experiences as female athletes and then what we see in clinic. And so ultimately, the goal is really to have a women's sports medicine or a female athlete program that will care for all women at all the different stages of life. But we felt the most pressing issue was that young female athlete. And for the reasons you mentioned, you know, early sports specialization has become, unfortunately, more the norm. So parents and athletes are being kind of pressured into playing a sport year round because they feel that's the only way they're going to advance or get to that next level team. When really the research shows, you know, doing cross training and playing in multiple sports actually provides greater benefit, but it's hard to convince people. And so that's one thing. And then certainly we've just become much more knowledgeable in terms of what we can do to prevent injury. And we want to share that with our, not just the young female athletes and their parents, but anyone who has a stake in the game. So coaches, administrators, I think it's so important that the community as a whole understands that, you know, these young female athletes really are at a pivotal point. We see that with young female athletes, they're much more likely to drop out of sports during puberty or during adolescence than their male counterparts. So it's not that we're neglecting our male athletes in the community, but really we see there's a need for these young female athletes because if they stop exercising in that middle school, high school age range, they're less likely to continue those good lifestyle habits for the rest of their lives versus if we can keep them in sport, there's so many benefits aside from the physical that can carry them through the rest of their lives.
Right. So what physiologically happens to young girls that is different than what happens to young boys? I mean, they both go through puberty, but is there something about, you know, like the pliability or flexibility of their joints or something, you know, things along those lines?
Well, I think, I mean, physiologically, obviously, women have menstrual cycles. And so the hormonal fluctuations in women are different than men. We know that in young boys, up until about middle school till junior high, boys and girls are pretty equal on the playing field, right? And so I think once the boys hit their pubertal peak, which is a little bit later than girls, their testosterone levels put them in an advantage. We know that. And so I think with the females, the physiology, there's definitely a lot to contend with menstrual cycles. You know, many young females and adult females struggle with either uncomfortable or, you know, irregular periods and all that goes along with that. And so the pliability, I guess, you know, to go back to your original question, there's, you know, certainly the hormones play a role in that, but it's more likely on the back end when we start to lose our hormones that we lose the flexibility than in our younger athletes. So I think it's more, we wanted to really provide education to the young female athletes about their periods and about how they can work through those changes that they're feeling. You know, it's not always fun to have a menstrual cycle. And so how do you work athletics around that? For some young girls, it's very scary and they don't want to be on a playing field and, you know, fear that they might get their period. And how do you manage that? Or how do you manage the symptoms that go along with that? But even more importantly, paying attention to those female athletes who are training too hard and aren't getting their period. So the physiology, we actually have an advantage with our female athletes because of the menstrual cycle. In our young athletes, we can kind of watch them a little bit more closely in terms of their training practices. And if people are getting into dangerous areas where they're overtraining and are at risk for more injury, we can see that based on their menstrual cycle or lack thereof. And so I think that the initial part of this series was really educating female athletes about going through puberty is normal. You're supposed to have a menstrual cycle in your teenage years. If you're not having a menstrual cycle, you might be more at risk, not just for injuries to the bone, because that's the thing that's most often affected, but we're learning that there's many more facets to it, including the mental health implications of those lack of hormones within the body. So we're trying to just promote letting young girls have normal physiology, which is having those menstrual cycles and having the normal changes that occur. Now, there are some changes that do impact their ability to perform. So, you know, when they start to develop breasts and, you know, like feeling uncomfortable in their uniforms or having the correct uniforms to support them are all issues that, you know, again, we're becoming more comfortable talking about it. And we want to normalize that for these young athletes and their families and understand that, like, we will listen to them and help them through those a little bit more challenging times.
Yes. If you're just joining me on The Mountain Life, I'm having a conversation with Dr. Carrie Jaworski. She is a sports medicine physician at Intermountain Park City Hospital's Sports Performance Center. We're talking about an upcoming 3-part free speaker series. The first one is on Tuesday, next Tuesday, April 30th at 6 p.m. And Carrie, you'll be kicking off this series, and this one is called Staying Balanced as a Young Female Athlete, Optimizing Performance While Avoiding Pitfalls. So in addition to what you've already been talking about, what can these young female athletes and their parents expect when they come in?
So we've done smaller versions of this particular talk for little groups around town, and it's been really well received. And that's why we felt we wanted to kick off with this topic, because it brings up so many topics. So staying balanced can mean, gosh, anything, right? But what we really want to focus on are achievable things that you can do as a young female athlete, or as a person who loves a young female athlete, in terms of recovery and sleep and avoiding overtraining, but even some of the more social issues of making sure that the coaches that are involved in your life or the lives of those that you parent are appropriate, right? So, you know, you hear horror stories around the world about bad coaching, and we know that can definitely impact a young person's life. So we want to make sure that the parents and athletes are given that power to recognize those things, as well as all the physical things we want to talk about, which include menstrual cycle. I'll touch on nutrition, but then we'll have a whole series dedicated to that. We'll definitely talk about the menstrual cycle and how that's important, why that's important, and then how to manage your training around your cycle. And then sleep, getting sleep and recovering and not having to be active 24/7, and why that's also important for just mental health as well as injury prevention.
So you mentioned a bit ago, and we all know this, any of us who have been around young athletes, that the specialization thing has really, I mean, it's crazy how early a lot of kids are specializing and dropping their other sports, which on one level is really hard if indeed they decide to terminate their involvement in that one sport. And then they've lost kind of all the other sports. So it doesn't make a lot of sense. But are coaches and parents, you said it's hard to get people to sign on to specializing later, but are we getting that message? Are you starting to see a change?
I think people are hearing us. Whether they're adhering to it is another story. And I mean, I can speak personally, you know, I'm a physician who does this every day, and I know the facts, and a lot of the research about early specialization came out of Chicago, where I'm from. So I know the researchers. I was part of that on a peripheral aspect. And I talk about it with all my athletes, but even as a parent myself, you have a child who loves a sport, and how do you, like, do you take it away from them? And then they're in this sport and they're excelling in it. So then their coaches are telling them, you should do this more. And how do you balance that? And so what I always advise parents and athletes is, you know, as long as it's still fun for the athlete, as long as they're happy and healthy and they're not kind of dragging their heels to go to practice, it has to be done for the right reasons. Certainly we know certain sports, you know, gymnastics, you know, and a lot of like dance related sport happens at a younger age. And so, you know, they've put in some protection, you know, as far as like when you can compete in the Olympics and whatnot, but even the training that leads up to that has to happen at a younger age. And so I think that's a really vulnerable population. But if you have that child who just loves it and that's their end all be all, we have to also take that into account. You know, I'm a sports medicine physician. I'm not going to tell people to not do sports, but at the same time, there just needs to be some watching of that. And so I'll tell athletes and their parents, you know, the kind of the party line is, if you're doing more hours per week than you are years old, and I'm sure you've heard that before, that really just puts you at risk. So if you're a 12-year-old and you're doing 20 hours of your sport or training for your sport, which it happens, your risk of injury and risk of issues just goes up logarithmically. So it exponentially increases. That doesn't mean you have to stop. I mean, that we tell that to the athletes all the time. You don't have to stop, but you just need to be aware, and you need to be better about managing the things you can manage. So like I said, like sleep and recovery and paying attention to nutrition, so that you're not increasing the risk even further of injury. But your point is really well taken, Lynn, too, that if you dedicate your entire life to this sport and then it doesn't pan out, what else, you know, what else is there? We want athletes in general tend to be involved in lots of extracurricular activities. And when you really focus early on one sport, you kind of give up all those other things. So we want to encourage people to really kind of spread their wealth across many different activities.
Right. Before we get to the next in the speaker series, which happens, you've got one a month for April, May, and June. But I have a question going back to the menstrual cycle. You know, in the last 25 years or so, I've heard that because of our consumption of more and more foods and things with hormones in them, young girls were starting their menstrual cycle earlier. And I don't know if that's the causal effect or not. But so I'm wondering about that. But then also on the other hand, is it a thing that young girls can be training so hard and overtraining that they're postponing the start of that menstrual cycle until, I don't know, what age?
No, it's absolutely something we need to pay attention to. And I can't speak as much to the hormones in our food and the early menstrual cycles. I think there is something to that, but I think the thing we worry about more is that delayed menstrual cycle. So the young women who maybe they get a first period at age 12, but then they're training really hard in their sport and they don't get another period for several years. Now we know when you first start a period, it is irregular, but irregular doesn't mean missing it for 2 years. And so my advice always to young athletes, every time I see a young person for their sports physical, that's a female athlete, we talk about, you know, there's a little box on the bottom of the form for the high school physicals that asks about their menstrual cycle. And I ask the young women, do you know why we ask this? And no one does. And so I explain to them and their parents that it really is a sign of health. Having a menstrual cycle means your body's developing normally, that you have enough fuel in your tank. If you're not getting enough energy to support what you're doing, whether that's in a sport or just in life, one of the first things that goes away is your menstrual cycle. So that's kind of, you know, in a way, women are lucky. They have that warning sign versus men don't have that warning sign of overtraining. So when you skip a period, and I always preface it by, if you were traveling or you were sick or you joined a new team and you're around new girls, your menstrual cycle might get a little bit erratic. But if you're skipping more than one period, so if you have, you know, 2 months in a row with no period, you need to get seen by your doctor or by one of us so that we can assess like what's going on. And it most likely is, you know, an overtraining issue, and that really sets them up for bone issues. And the reason we care so much in our young athletes is you lay down the bone you need for the rest of your life. Most of it by age 18, about 90% of your bone for the rest of your life is by age 18. The remaining 10% is up to age 30. So I tell these young people, you have until 30 to get all the bone you need. That sounds like a long time away, but it's really not. And especially people living into their 90s and 100s, you really need to lay down a good foundation. And if you're robbing your body of energy during those formative years, then you're setting yourself up for problems down the road. Unfortunately, we don't usually see these kids until they've had an injury. So they come in with a stress fracture, and then we uncover, oh my gosh, you've only had 3 periods in the last year. And then we have to kind of backtrack. So the goal with this program is really to get that information out there so that people are more apt to come in sooner before it's a big problem, and we can keep them healthy and keep them competing and doing the things that they love.
Really smart. Okay, just one more quick question on that topic. Is the reason for skipping periods more than, I mean, I'm sure it's multifaceted. Is it just stress on your body? And what about like not having enough fat, body fat reserves? That's another reason, right?
So, right. So the reason why we lose our menstrual cycle is basically energy balance. So energy meaning how many calories we put in versus how many calories we're burning with our activities and just with our normal daily activities, not including just the sports. So we do know people with lower body fat may have more of an increased risk. As they lose weight, they lose some of their body fat because they're using that fat to for metabolism, right? They don't have enough fuel, so they kind of break down their own body. And so honestly, we talk to our athletes when they're not getting enough fuel in their body, their menstrual cycle goes away, their bone health is jeopardized, but they also lose muscle too. So the body takes what it needs from everywhere and anywhere. And so you'll see, we call it REDS, or relative energy deficiency in sport. And so that's the kind of the new term. You may have heard of female athlete triad in the past, but we've changed the term to REDS because it doesn't just affect women. It also affects our male counterparts. But that energy deficiency in sport is a wheel with many spokes. So it's it is the, you know, the menstrual cycle issues that we talked about. It's bone health. It affects your gastrointestinal system and how things are transported through your GI tract. It can affect your heart and cause, you know, arrhythmias. It affects our endurance and our strength and mental health, which, you know, is another huge topic. And so there's a huge correlation between not having enough energy and pretty much think of any organ system in the body being affected by not having enough energy.
Wow, these are such important points. So again, it's Tuesday, April 30th at 6 p.m. Is it downstairs there?
It is. It's in the Blair Education Center. So we'll have plenty of signage. And I really hope to, you know, I don't want it just to be a lecture where I'm talking to the audience. What I find is super helpful is really having the people who are there ask questions and get those questions answered, because I can tell you what I know, but I don't know what you don't know. And so bring your questions and, you know, we'll do our best to try to get people's questions answered. And I think what I really enjoyed is watching the athletes kind of share their stories with each other and give advice to each other in these kinds of sessions. It's been really, really enlightening and inspiring to see what they share with each other.
Great. So no RSVP necessary to show up. Is that right?
We do want you to RSVP so we have enough chairs. So you can RSVP to Robin Hayes, and we can provide her email if that's helpful. But that would be helpful just because we want to make sure the room is big enough for the math people who want to come.
Okay, great.
If you forget to RSVP, we will not turn you away.
Right. Okay, we'll make sure that we post Robin's email also on our post. Okay, the next one is Tuesday, May 14th at 6 p.m. And this one is about sports nutrition with dietitian Alexandra Krause. She'll be talking about using food as fuel, considerations for the young female athlete. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
Absolutely. So we're really excited. So Alex is a new hire for us. So she'll be our full-time sports dietitian for the Wasatch Back. So she'll be housed in our center, helping out at all the high schools in the area, giving other talks throughout the community. And then we wanted to highlight her as a new member of our team, providing practical advice on how do you fit it in? You know, like you have an athlete who starts school super early and has to get to practice, and where is their time to get in the required nutrition? And so finding things that are achievable, easy wins, you know, not coming up with this very complex dietary plan, but really giving those key components to protect the bone health, to keep the menstrual cycle going. And then also looking at how fuel can impact performance, right? So, you know, not enough fuel, as we've really been harping on to this morning, can impact your performance. But then, you know, what is the best type of fuel to use, and how do you maximize that for the young growing athlete?
What do you find the fallbacks are for kids who are really busy and don't take the time to eat well? Is it, you know, they eat nothing but, you know, bars?
I think it's convenient, right? So you know, but we don't want anyone living on three bars a day as their form of nutrition, right? So we all do it in a pinch. But you know, I think the biggest thing that we have to teach all athletes and active people is having a little bit of prep, you know, so not waiting till, you know, you're running out the door to think about, oh my gosh, what am I having for breakfast? Like there needs to be some thought ahead of time on what am I going to do? I know I have a busy day tomorrow, getting the meal prep going. I think that can be a really fun family experience, you know, Sunday nights, getting snacks in the refrigerator for the week so that it's just grab and go. I think that goes a long way in avoiding the pitfalls of not getting enough fuel. So if you're prepared and you have plenty of options in your bag or your, you know, wherever you're storing your snacks between classes and practice, I think that is going to really help in the long run. But it takes being prepared. And so we spend a lot of time talking to athletes about that, taking some ownership of it and not relying on which fast food place can I run through quickly before practice, because that's just not going to be as good of a result.
Right. It's a lifelong effort, isn't it?
It really is.
Okay, so again, that's Tuesday, May 14th at 6 p.m. again at the Blair Education Center at Park City Hospital, Intermountain Park City Hospital, I should say. And that's with dietitian Alexandra Kraus. And then the final class is on Tuesday, June 11th, again, 6 p.m., same place. And this is with athletic trainer Robin Hayes. And her topic is keeping the young female athlete in the game, strength and conditioning tips for injury prevention and better performance. What can we expect there? I mean, it kind of spells it out, but.
It does. So Robin, as well as Marlene Hatch, who Marlene is our head of sports performance here at the hospital and longtime Park City resident. The two of them, like I said, my partners in crime in putting this whole thing together, wanted to really provide some tips as far as outside of your normal training with your team, how do you prevent injury? And so one, identifying where weaknesses are. So some quick, easy ways to evaluate, like, what do I need to work on? You know, and so there's that. And then how do I work on it? So what are ways that I can incorporate this into my warm-up routine, my training, you know, my cool down after a workout? And also importantly, when do I need to get help? Like when is this beyond what I can do? And do I need to be seen by somebody for more formal therapy or evaluation for an injury? So I think that there'll be a focus on strength training. I think nowadays women are more apt to want to strength train. There's been so many benefits that, you know, we all have heard about, but I think still there's some fear for certain athletes. And so getting them to understand why it's important and how it'll be helpful in the long run, both for performance and injury prevention.
Okay, wow, what an incredible trio of evenings that you're providing for free to the Summit and Wasatch County residents and all of the young female athletes and their parents. So thanks for putting this on. We're really lucky in this community that we have this kind of expertise.
And we want to also remind people that, you know, come to this one, but there will be more. So we'll be doing a series for the more mature female athlete down the road, and then eventually having a full program here at the center so that female athletes can come and go. And one other thing that I'm hoping to initiate, we've been talking with the high schools and some of the local sports clubs, having what's called a huddle. So having for young female athletes, maybe a quarterly meet and greet somewhere in the community with myself and other leaders in the community and in the sports medicine world, just for them to have additional time to talk. And it's been done in other communities and been quite successful. So having a place for female athletes to go and just kind of debrief about stuff that's going on. So stay tuned for that as well.
That sounds great. Dr. Carrie Jaworski, Intermountain Park City Hospital Sports Performance Center. Thank you so much for joining me today on The Mountain Life.
Thanks for having me, Lynn.
And again, that first of the series is offered on Tuesday, April 30th at 6 p.m. at the Blair Education Center. As she said, please RSVP if you can, but if you can't, just show up. And by the way, we had promoed hearing from Greg Hanscom, the director and publisher of the High Country News today, but you will hear from him next week, next Wednesday on The Mountain Life. Stay with us.
Welcome back to The Mountain Life. I'm Mary Beth Maziarz.
And I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
This morning, local resident and founder of Brawley Arts, Amy McDonald, joins us in the studio to talk about bringing awareness to the declining Great Salt Lake through the arts. As is said about her efforts, the science has figured out the crisis, but art can bring it to the people who, through their understanding and passion, can institute large-scale change, which I am definitely a fan of. She discusses a film project called Illusion of Abundance. Amy McDonald, welcome to The Mountain Life.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Oh, we're so excited to have you. So the arts is my wheelhouse. This is my happy place. Tell us how it came to be that the arts became this interpretive format for this data and all these changes that are happening around us.
Well, so Brawley Arts, we typically, with the work we do, we center racial, social, and climate justice projects. And back in 2004, I did a project for Great Salt Lake trying to increase value and beauty when the Legacy Highway was up for discussion and litigation. And it was amazing how much it changed when the creative mediums came to the front and people's opinions. And I've grown up here. I love Great Salt Lake. My children have. My parents took the last train out to Salt Air for a big party before they shut it down. So it's in our family. Wow. And a friend who had also worked on my previous project with me came to me one day and he said, Amy, we have to save the lake. And I said, I'm in. So what we've understood through our work is if we can touch hearts as well as minds, the chance that we can inspire people to engage and take action is much higher. And so what was interesting is we were learning, and this project has been evolving for over 2.5 years. And as we've been learning, how complicated the situation is. It was interesting, Bonnie Baxter, who's the director of the Great Salt Lake Institute, came to me and said, Amy, we have the science, but you have to tell people what's going on through the arts. You have to reach them, you have to touch them, you have to get them aware and involved. So one thing led to the other, to the creation of Illusion of Abundance.
It's a wonderful project. It's a, not only is it a film, but a kind of a collection of some essays, and you just get sucked in. For me, I call it like the goosebump factor. You know, what is it that is going to move me? Not only move my heart, but move me to action in some way, move me to commitment. What even 2.5 years ago, we're in 2022 is the lowest year so far on record for the Great Salt Lake, right? And you had already begun when that started. What are you finding as far as social awareness of not only the lake itself, but some of the cultural and racial issues around it?
Well, that's a great question, because when we really stepped into this, a friend of mine who works for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife, she said, Amy, if you really want to understand how to bring about change to the lake, you have to understand every system that affects it. We're enthusiastic learners still, 2.5 years in. What really showed up in the learning is in Utah, and I don't know if this is elsewhere, but in Utah, when decisions are being made around natural resources, nature and the indigenous voice are left out. And so it has become the awareness that we're really having, and that's why there's such a strong indigenous presence in our film, is that I wanted to change that. I wanted to change, what if we had a holistic viewpoint about looking at natural resources, which really would prompt, what about a huge cultural shift in terms of our values and use of water, and how do we value the natural world, and what about indigenous knowledge systems who have tremendous knowledge about land, particularly living in a desert? And since we have the second cheapest water in the nation, and we have the second highest water consumption per capita in the nation,
whoa,
living in a desert, we have a lot of things we would be, it would be important for us to really look at and examine and see what things we can change. But I have to say, in 2.5 years, building relationships with many different indigenous people and tribes, and many critical conversations to really learn, we have a lot of learning to do and a lot of change to make.
Well, thank you for starting to bring this to public awareness more.
If you're just joining us on The Mountain Life, we're having a conversation with local resident Amy McDonald. She is the founder and director of Brawley Arts, and they are bringing a film, Illusion of Abundance. It's a whole project surrounding bringing awareness through the arts to the declining Salt Lake, and the Salt Lake as in the lake, Great Salt Lake. And Amy, it's really... it's really interesting as we are slowly waking up to this biggest of crises, really, which is the declining Salt Lake. And I know you're not a scientist, but you're very passionate about it, and you've read all the science. We spoke with Bonnie Baxter on Cool Science Radio some months ago, and she's in charge, as you said, the Great Salt Lake Institute. She's the science behind it. And so what are the most salient points that you want to communicate to people through the arts about Great Salt Lake?
That's a great question. opening our hearts and minds to understand that there's other knowledge systems, particularly indigenous knowledge systems, about ideas of how to use water and land wisely and thoughtfully and holistically. That's one. Second is the awareness of how we use water. We don't even pay the actual cost of water. And what if we had that awareness of what does it really cost to have our water? And what does that really mean? And also looking at how do communities make decisions about water and natural resources and our ecosystems. So right now, for example, there's proposals to create inland ports because what happens, it seems as though when there's a focus on the crisis of Great Salt Lake, other entities come in and want to create inland ports around the lake. One proposal would kill 60% of the wetlands around the lake, and that needs to come to attention. So not only do we need to understand our water use and misuse and our policies around water, but talk to our neighbors and also understand how interconnected everything is. Without the lake, without the ecosystems, it will be very difficult to have a healthy air quality, sustainable lifestyle in Utah. And so I've heard people speak about, well, we just want to prepare you for when all this happens. And my thought is, wait, I'm a person of hope and change. Let's dig in now. Let's learn what we can do so that prediction doesn't come to pass, that how we use water, we become very wise about it and we come to care about it a whole lot more.
This same kind of campaign took place around Mono or Mono Lake, I don't know how people say it, in California, and essentially changed the trajectory of Mono Lake and what happened there. And it's my understanding that it has kind of been resuscitated, for lack of a better word. And I think that it was communicated largely to the people through the arts.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah, tell us a little more about that.
So effort. I know less about Mono Lake, although I do know its history, than I do about Owens Lake.
Owens Lake, right.
And so Owens Lake was drained to create Los Angeles. And the manner in which that was done created so much devastation to the environment. It displaced thousands of indigenous people. The land quality degraded. Where it is right now, fast forward years after Los Angeles was created, is Los Angeles has paid over $23 billion to try to get Owens Lake to meet environmental EPA standards, and they still have not. Every year, 300,000 tons of toxic dust flies in the air, and it comes across California, it comes here. So our Great Salt Lake is five times bigger than Owens Lake. So if you can imagine, if we let the lake beds dry and the arsenic and all the other things fly into the air, if we let the lake die, we have a crisis one of the largest environmental crises facing us. So we have an opportunity now to save the lake, get it to healthy levels of water, sustain all the ecosystems, and avoid this crisis. Because last summer, the north end of the lake died, and they built up the dirt to keep the south end reasonably healthy. So we still have a chance, but we're down to the do or die actions, and we can do it. And as a public, that's why there's a nonprofit organization called Grow the Flow, and they're getting 100,000 people in a grassroots effort to speak up and speak out. And so all these amazing organizations are coming together to say, we have to do it if our and many elected officials want to also save the lake, and many, you know, you can hear all different kinds of opinions about relationships with elected officials, but the reality is we the people, it's up to us.
Excellent. I thought that the title of the project, Illusions of Abundance or Illusion of Abundance, was so compelling because people talk a lot about abundance, right? And how are we manifesting and how are we grateful for our abundance? And there is a lot of abundance around us here in Utah. I also thought it was interesting how in the past few years, in 2022, when the levels were so low, there was this kind of illusion of the bright side, right? When Lake Powell was so low that they were discovering some ruins or artifacts. And it was like people were kind of trying to find some good in it, which is terrific, but not really, because the devastation is far more impactful. Tell us a little bit about the illusions that we're all holding right now about the Great Salt Lake.
I think for many people, the illusion is that there would always be water in the lake. That, I mean, I always thought that. I mean, the water was always high levels. You could go out there and enjoy it. So there was this illusion that it would just always be there. And in the film, it's so great because there's a saying in there that the illusion was that there was never the abundance. And there's always been abundance. So it's how we use it. So, I mean, our water has been over-diverted, over-allocated. We still have many ways we can change and repair that. But if we could have a mindset that we already have abundance.
So you're kind of playing with that.
Right.
Both sides of
right,
that.
Right, right. Yes. And it's all how we use what we have. And there's a great saying by Christina Mittermeier. She's an internationally renowned conservationist for indigenous people and marine life. And her comment is, take what you need, but use all you take.
Yeah.
Just even that.
Kind of like what our parents said about food.
Yeah.
You know, it's just kind of that. So the illusion of abundance, we thought it was quite an appropriate name because there's many things to play with that. But I loved the idea that the illusion was that we didn't have the abundance when it's always been there.
Oh, that's great. You mentioned something in the first section that we have the cheapest water in the country and yet we're the highest users. Wouldn't a natural kind of economic leveling happen if our water became more expensive for us to use? Have they explored that a little bit? To slow the flow?
Yeah, I mean, so we are the second cheapest, we have the second cheapest water in the nation. And yes, if the pricing of water were to change, then yes, probably the consumption and economics would change. And again, I'm not the expert there, but that was one of the things that we've really learned. And when you look at like Nevada, who's really worked to mitigate their water use so that people could live there because they want to live there. And in that one book, what is it, Cadillac Desert, or where they talk about how desert cities are not sustainable after 150 years.
Wow.
Because you overuse, overconsume. And so we're at this place where we still have a really terrific opportunity, and we have so much knowledge,
yeah,
so many innovations, and so many creative ways to address this problem. It would be so great to have them more at the forefront and considered.
Yeah, instead of praying for rain and,
yeah,
and
you saw
sending,
that in the
good,
film.
Sending good thoughts, maybe our legislators could think of diverting some extra funds toward rehab and restoration.
Well, Brian Steed, who's head of the Great Salt Lake Commission, it's an appointed position, has been absolutely amazing about going around and learning and proposing ideas and coming up with solutions and a 5-year strategic plan. So he is trying, and he's really out there communicating with people and engaging with different constituencies on solutions.
Mm. Thank you. Tell you what, water at my house is 50 cents a gallon, and nothing like, I mean, literally, there's nothing like water being expensive to get you to curtail your water use. It's very effective. Very effective.
It makes you really aware of what do you need and what is... Like,
those showers get quick.
Yeah.
We're so quick. Like, if you're washing dishes, man, that sink is off.
That's
until
right.
You're ready to rinse.
I've revamped my whole wardrobe. I only wear wool now because you don't have to wash it so often. I mean, it's a thing.
It's true.
So one of the efforts in legislation, I think, in Utah here is to look at and revamp the whole system behind water shares and water rights, which I can never keep straight, the difference between the two. But a lot of it is use it or lose it. And so a lot of this water is being used when it doesn't need to be used, and instead of flowing down into Great Salt Lake as it really should be. And I don't really know about how that, is that something in your wheelhouse that you could talk about?
I can
about?
Speak a little bit about it. And again, I want to say high level because I'm not the expert.
You're not the science.
I'm not the
scientist,
science, I'm the
yeah.
artist. I'll communicate what we learned. but basically we don't have enough manpower currently for good oversight. So in areas where there's good oversight, water share regulation, to my understanding, is managed well. In other areas where there's not enough manpower for oversight, it is a use it or lose it. And if you don't use the amount allocated or that you that is coming your way. So you have to run the water 24 hours a day, you would lose it. And that creates a different kind of mentality about what do you actually need? And then the fear of if you lose any of the water that you thought was coming your way. So there's opportunities to look at how are we managing water. The other thing is there are many unused water rights. And one idea that had been proposed is for the state to buy them all back and send it to the lake, send it to Great Salt Lake. That's just one idea. And so in speaking, like, particularly to one of our Indigenous participants who has some land up in Cache Valley, he told a neighbor, I'm going to send all this water that I'm not using to the lake. And he said, no, you're not. We'll take it. And so there is a viewpoint of, yes, we want water to the lake, and yes, we want what is allocated or we would like to have allocated for use. And so I think our understanding of what do we need, what is luxury, and what can get to the lake. Like, we need to sustain the lake at a very certain level. That's indisputable. And so we have to get the water there. And so by what means? And then other things that we've learned about is, say, for example, wastewater treatment facilities. Things start out as a public service, and then because the water quality now needs to be at a certain standard to meet EPA standards, it's expensive, the purification of the water. So then suddenly these treatment facilities, they get running short on finances, and so what can they do? So instead of letting the secondary water go to the lake, they sell it off. Mm-hmm, so right. We have other things to look at. Where could we help here? So these are just some of the things that we're learning to understand. But I think that Brian Steed is doing a really great job to take a look at how can we manage our water rights allocation, because it was really easy to always get a share. And it was only last year that originally it was not deemed beneficial to have water in a lake. And it was only last year that we got the legal state declaration that it is now beneficial to have water in a lake. So it's slow. But
seems so intuitive, but
So the event, you're showing the film. We better give those particulars.
Yes.
It's Tuesday, April 30th, so next Tuesday at Westminster.
At Westminster University in the Viv Gore Hall. And you can go to our website, Brawley Arts, Brolly Arts.org, to learn more and get your tickets there. They're free, but we are asking that you reserve a seat so we know how many people are coming.
And it's in the evening, right?
It's in the evening. And it's going to be, we're so excited because it's a very rich evening. We have a number of our partners that will be there tabling and available to talk to people about what's going on and bring that kind of energy so you can learn more, sign up, engage. And then also in addition to the film, we have a really... not to give it all away, but a very lovely way of starting the evening in a way that is a holistic acknowledgement to the land by some very special Indigenous guests. And we've invited all of our Indigenous participants and film participants will be there, and we're going to have a conversation with the audience. And we have, as well as, so it would be a conversation about looking at what if we had a cultural shift in terms of our values and how we use the resources that we have? So we'll have the dust expert, we have the science experts, we have all of the artists and the Indigenous people. So there's a lot to talk about.
Oh, wonderful. Well, I want to return a little bit to the integration of the arts with this project. It blew me away. Can you share a little bit about how you, so if you're listening at home, there are dancers, there's essays, there's filmmaking. It's this kind of integration and combination of so many models of interpreting the world. How did you find these people? Who helped put this all together in this particular film format?
So again, 2.5 years. When we first started in, we got the idea. So Sophia Katubris, who is the author of Illusion of Abundance and also performs in the film, she wrote this narrative that is 100% verifiable. And we created, that was kind of our anchor piece when we first started doing events. And when it was a choreographed dance piece, and when we initially performed it, there was not a dry eye in the audience. And it was sort of proof of concept. And I said, all right, we have something. And then as we did that, then I said to our friends at Twig Media Lab, who we've worked with for years and years, I said, I think we need to film this. So we went out to the lake to film this. And then, as I say, they always tease me. They're like, we start here and we end up way over here with you on projects. I'm like, that's because of our learning. And it was at that time that I was really understanding how nature and the indigenous voice is not at the table. And I really wanted to walk that talk.
Yeah,
and
that change inclusion is incredible.
Yeah. So we've spent 2 years building relationships with 8 different tribes. And learning, and like I say, very critical conversations. Because I could, for example, I might say, well, we were thinking this, and somebody would say, that is so not okay with our tribe. You cannot have this chanting with a female in the film present, because that is for the male members of our tribe, and this is what that means. And so the learning is so wonderful. So with the help of Twig Media Lab, with the help of our Indigenous partners, with the help of the dancers and the narrative, we worked to find a way to weave this all together in the film. And we had a screening late December, I think it was, and we invited many of our Indigenous friends and scientists and artists to view it and give us feedback. And because of their awesome feedback, we made significant changes to the film, and so that's the way it is. The why it is the way it is now is because so many people were willing to step in and care and help guide the process.
Fantastic.
So it takes a village. Everything with Brawley Arts always takes a village, and it's very collaborative.
Amy McDonald, the founder and director of Brawley Arts. You can go to brawleyarts.org, B-R-O-L-L-Y. arts.org to RSVP or to get the ticket, the free ticket. And this event is taking place on Tuesday, April 30th from 6:30 to 8:30 at Westminster University in the what center?
Aviv Gore Concert Hall.
Okay, there we go.
And you can also buy the film on the website, and I highly encourage you to. It is really fantastic.
Oh, yeah. So if you want to also, we'd love to have you come to the event, but if you're not able to or you'd like to view it, you can go to our website. Mary Beth just did it, where we ask for a $10 donation, and you can view the film there.
Happy to donate that.
Absolutely. Really important work. Amy, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for inviting me. It's been such a pleasure.
And thanks for tuning in to The Mountain Life here on KPCW Park City.